You're going to love this. Just love it.
Ebola soup. Why would I want Ebola soup? What?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Oh, a bowl of soup. A bowl of soup.
That's so scared in case I fall off my chair.
I'll have that.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
After I'm off the air, though.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Who wants a bowl of soup?
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
And I'm
I am stuck in the middle with you. This broadcast has been CDC certified Ebola free. You cannot get Ebola from listening to this show today. No matter what they tell you on Fox News, you just can't get Ebola from listening to the broadcast. Daryl Issa thinks it's called Ebola. He called it Ebola. Did you hear that? Ebola. Anyway. it's the broadcast. We are back live in Los Angeles, in the studios, the beautiful, the elegant studios of KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Oregon Central Coast, and of course, coast to coast and around the globe on kpfk.org, on the Stitcher app, on the TuneIn app, on the Progressive Voices channel, on Netroots Radio, on Indie Media Weekly, on iTunes, and of course on the Twitters, where you can find me at the Brad Blog. This is your Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. Really delighted to be back live. We have not been on the air live here at KPFK Pacifica Radio for the past several weeks, as KPFK has been in fun drive mode. So it is good to be back on our, what do we have, about 120,000 blazing watts across the West Coast, up and down the Southern California and beyond. And so it's good to be back. While we were gone, there was so much going on in the with the Supreme Court, with all of these amazing voter suppression laws around the country and Supreme Court rulings about them, that we were doing shows anyway. Radio or not, KPFK or not, we were doing podcasts, and I will try to catch folks up with what you may have missed over the past several weeks as we barrel towards Election Day, now just days away, voting underway across the country. I'll try to catch up on what you may have missed if you didn't catch our podcasts, which, by the way, you can catch them anytime. Go to the iTunes and search for Brad Friedman at the on iTunes, because if you search Bradcast, they put up all of these things they think are broadcasts. They're error spell checkers or whatever. Very difficult. Anyway, you can find it there, or you can always go to Bradcast. No, bradblog.com/Bradcast. So you can always catch up on the latest. And what I'm going to do is try to catch you up on what you missed over the past couple of weeks, including a rundown of all of those Supreme Court decisions that you missed in Iowa, in North Carolina, in Wisconsin, in Arkansas, and especially now in Texas, where voters are being turned away under the Texas unconstitutional Texas photo ID restriction law that the Supreme Court has incredibly allowed to stay in place, even though it is unconstitutional. I will explain all of that to you ahead. Also, how the Brad Blog helped to change the Supreme Court opinion on that ruling. Sort of proud of that. We sort of helped change an official ruling at the Supreme Court last week after it was published. Also, you'll be not shocked at all to learn that touchscreen votes are flipping once again across the country. I was on Tom Hartman's TV show earlier this week to talk about it. We will have that. And if the radio gods are with us, our musical tribute to the never-ending mess from the 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems that even Republicans are bothering to notice this year. You know, right before Andrew Breitbart died a few years ago, he used to love to troll me on the Twitters and, you know, because I was pointing out how the touchscreen machines were 100% unverifiable, how Diebold voting machines and ESNS and Sequoia voting machines were screwing over the country. Breitbart thought it was hilarious, thought it was a joke, thought it was some crazy lefty conspiracy. And now all the right wingers are flipping out because guess what? The right wingers' votes are now flipping on touchscreen machines in Illinois, in Maryland. Don't tell dead Andy Breitbart, but they've been doing that for years. They have been flipping, and they were flipping from Republican to Democrat, Democratic to Republican. Anyway, that and our musical tribute to it all straight ahead. Also, Desi Doyen and the Green News Report will be back as usual because, well, because she's always here, but also because climate change is on the ballot this year. For the first time, by the way, candidates are now, this has been great over the past several weeks, candidates are now finally being pressed during debates on their positions on global warming. That's a nice change of pace. Also, the results of next Tuesday's midterms will have a huge impact on climate change, including the likelihood, not to scare you, but sit down. If you're not sitting down right now, sit down. If the Republicans gain the majority in the U.S. Senate, the king of the climate change deniers, Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma, he will be the head of the Senate Environment Committee. Yes. But there's more than that to be concerned about. We will get all of that straight ahead when Desi Doyen joins us for the Green News Report. But first, okay, let's look at the Supreme Court. Let's look at voting rights now as we head into this election, as we are in this election, as early voting is now underway, as I said. Okay, let me quickly review all of the major decisions made by the Supreme Court over just the past few weeks and how they will affect voters in each of the states where these decisions were made. First, in Arkansas, and actually this wasn't the U.S. Supreme Court. This was the Arkansas State Supreme Court struck down that state's Republican photo ID restriction law, finding that it violated the state constitutional right to vote. That's good. In Arkansas, good news, y'all get to vote this year if you want to. If you want to, it's up to you, but you get to vote in Arkansas thanks to the Supreme Court finding that the Republican photo ID restriction law in that state violated the state constitution and the right to vote that is guaranteed to all Arkansas voters over the age of 18. Now, a lot of people think, by the way, that we have no right to vote in this country. It's been interesting to hear this from Republicans over the past several weeks. There's no right to vote. It's a privilege to vote. No, it's actually a right to vote. Many state constitutions expressly guarantee that right to vote to all of their eligible voters 18 and over, which is why Arkansas shut down the Republican attempt at voter suppression, which was requiring these photo ID restrictions. Arkansas cut it down. Missouri has cut it down in the past because they have a similar provision in their state constitution. Earlier this year, Wisconsin shut it down because they have a state constitutional provision with the right to vote. Pennsylvania shut down. All of these states had Republican photo ID restrictions that were shut down by the state Supreme Court because they were in violation of the state constitution. Now let's go to the U.S. Constitution in Ohio this year. The U.S. District Court once again ordered Republicans to restore a week of early voting during the so-called Golden Week when people could both register and vote on the same day. Federal courts in Ohio have done this over and over and over. Ordered them to restore souls to the polls Sunday. That's the early voting on the Sunday before the election. The appellate court agreed with the district court after the Republicans there tried to challenge that ruling. And then the Supreme Court overturned both of the lower courts, allowing the GOP voter suppression to take place in Ohio this year. They said that, this ruling from the U.S. District Court and the appellate court was just too close to the election day, too close to the beginning of voting, and we don't allow rules to be changed just before the election. So that voter suppression in Ohio was a success, is a success this year. They will shorten early voting and end same-day registration in that 1 week when you used to be able to do it. Moving on to North Carolina, where there is more bad news. The U.S. Appeals Court ordered that North Carolina Republicans restore same-day registration and allowing ballots to be cast, to be counted after they're cast in the wrong precinct. But the Supreme Court overturned that as well, allowing the Republican voter suppression law to take place in North Carolina this year. And in North Carolina, by the way, it is the mother of all voter suppression laws. It does everything that Republicans have tried to do around the country. It shortens early voting. It ends same-day registration. It will, beginning in 2016, require a photo ID restriction. Anyway, the Supreme Court allowed that law to go forward, even though the appeals court said it was a violation of the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution. Supreme Court allowed it to go forward anyway because, again, this appeals court decision they decided was just too close to the election, so we had to leave it in place. So, voter suppression in Ohio, in place. Voter suppression in North Carolina, in place, thanks to the U.S. Supreme Court. And then we get to Wisconsin, where earlier this year, a U.S. District Court judge struck down that state's photo ID voting law, finding that it was a violation of the Voting Rights Act and the U.S. Constitution. That was earlier this year, so that law was out until just a few weeks ago. The appellate court struck down that lower court's ruling, used erroneous reasons to do so, among them that you needed an ID to board a plane and to open a bank account, to rent an apartment, so why not to vote? All of that is untrue. It's a lie. You don't need a photo ID to board a plane. The commercial airlines are not about to turn away 30 million customers in this country, paying customers who don't have photo ID restrictions. The ACLU, who was challenging all of this in Wisconsin, chided the Seventh Circuit Court. They wrote this. The Seventh Circuit also could not fathom that so many registered Wisconsin voters lack a photo ID. 300,000 of them, by the way. 300,000 perfectly legal voters in Wisconsin lack a photo ID. Seventh Circuit could not imagine that, says the ACLU, in, quote, in a world in which photo ID is essential to board an airplane, pick up prescription at a pharmacy, open a bank account, or cash a check at a currency exchange, buy a gun, or enter a courthouse to serve as a juror, or watch the argument of this appeal, unquote. That was from the Seventh Circuit's opinion. The ACLU replies to say, wrong, 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 and wrong again. Wisconsin flyers, patients, bank customers, gun owners, and court watchers do not need photo IDs, only Wisconsin voters. The good news is the Supreme Court then threw out that Wisconsin appellate court decision, which means the photo ID law in Wisconsin, where there's this incredibly tight race between Scott Walker, Republican Governor Scott Walker, and his Democratic challenger, Mary Burke, they do not need to present photo ID when voting this year. That's the good news in Wisconsin. And once again, the Supreme Court used the premise that, well, earlier in this year, they did away with the photo ID law. The U.S. District Court did away with it, said it was unconstitutional. So the appellate court can't come along at the last minute and change the rules. So in this case, the Supreme Court precedent that disallows last minute changes to election laws, in this case, it worked against the voter suppressors. the Republican voter suppressors. So that's the good news in Wisconsin. You can vote, Wisconsinites, and I expect you to do so if you give a damn about what's going on in your state. Incredibly, and we talked about this on one of the broadcast podcasts over the past couple of weeks, the original judge, the Reagan-appointed conservative Judge Richard Posner on the Seventh Circuit, he's the guy who originally approved the first photo ID restriction in the country back in 2008 in Indiana, the landmark case Crawford versus Marion County. Richard Posner, who is the most well-cited jurist in the 20th century, according to the Yale Legal Review. The Supreme Court loves this guy. They love Richard Posner. He's the guy who approved photo ID in the first place back in 2008. But this time, years later, he now sees that these laws are meant to do nothing but restrict voters from voting, particularly Democratic voters from voting. He admits now he got it wrong. And on the Seventh Circuit, he was dissenting in that case when that idiot, Frank Easterbrook, Judge Frank Easterbrook, put out that ruling with all sorts of factual errors in it about needing an ID to board a plane and so on and so forth. Posner absolutely destroyed him. He said that these laws are, quote, a mere fig leaf for efforts to disenfranchise voters likely to vote for the political party that does not control the government. He said there is only one motivation for imposing burdens on voting that are ostensibly designed to discourage voter impersonation fraud, if there is no actual danger of such fraud, and that is to discourage voting by persons likely to vote against the party responsible for imposing the burdens. Posner goes on to point out that in every state, every single state where these photo ID restrictions have been put in place, these strict restrictions have been put in place, in every case, it was a Republican House and a Republican Senate in the legislature who did it and a Republican governor who signed the bill. One of my favorite lines from Posner's dissent, and you got to read the whole thing. We got it at bradblog.com. I wrote about it over at Salon a couple of weeks ago. He said that, his partner, Easterbrook, who had the majority opinion on the Seventh Circuit, said it doesn't really matter if these laws actually stop voter fraud. It doesn't matter if they actually give confidence to voters, because as it turns out, they don't give confidence to voters. Voters are equally suspicious of elections in states that have these laws and in states that don't. But Easterbrook said, well, you know, it doesn't matter. The legislature thinks it improves confidence in elections. And we know this because the Wisconsin legislature passed this law. Therefore, we have to, give them legislative discretion. Posner responded, quote, if the Wisconsin legislature says witches are a problem, shall Wisconsin courts be permitted to conduct witch trials? Man, I love that Richard Posner, Reagan-appointed conservative judge on the Seventh Circuit, and his opinion on this matter is going to come into play later on when the Wisconsin law, which has for now been knocked down, when that comes back, it is currently being appealed by the state of Wisconsin, and it will no doubt find its way to the Supreme Court along with a lot of these other photo ID restriction cases. Posner's response was amazing. Okay, in all of those cases we just went through, Ohio, North Carolina, Wisconsin, the Supreme Court overturned the lower court's rulings blocking Republican voter suppression in Wisconsin, but allowing it in Ohio and North Carolina on the basis of the what they call the Purcell principle, that you can't change the laws right before the election. You can't change the rules as they begin. So then the question is, what about Texas? Can you change the laws in Texas? Would that be allowed if a court found that their law would discriminate against 600,000 legal registered voters in Texas? The case of photo ID restrictions in Texas is absolutely fascinating. And we now know what's going to happen. And we know there's going to be voters not allowed to vote. We're already seeing that. not to get ahead of myself here. But this fight in Texas, there's a few things that folks probably don't know when they hear about what the Republicans are doing down there in Texas. What they don't know is that Texas already had an ID requirement in place since 2003. And I've been yelling at Democrats for years for saying, oh, these voter ID laws are a bad idea. No, voter ID laws are okay. They're already used in, you know, a majority of states, so long as the ID is reasonable, so long as you're allowed to present things like, you know, a bank statement, a birth certificate, a tax return. That has been the case for every single voter in Texas since 2003. If you went to the polls, you had to show ID before you got to vote, and it was fine. It was not a problem because there were enough forms of ID that people, you know, could come up with it. It was only once Texas realized, well, you know what? This is not disenfranchising enough people. This is not disenfranchising enough Democratic voters. Those Hispanics, those African Americans, they're growing in size every day. How do we keep them from being able to vote? Those single women, they have that pesky habit of voting for Democrats. What can we do as the demographics continue to work against us here in Texas? Well, they saw what was happening in Texas, and they realized that the ID law, the voter ID law they had in place in 2003 was not good enough. We had to narrow that down even further to about six or seven different types of photo IDs that we know that a lot of women and minorities and students and the elderly and the poor, the people who tend to vote Democratic, that they will not have. And they have been fighting to restrict that ID law, which was already strict, to make it even more strict. They have been doing this for years. Republicans play the long game on this, and Democrats would be wise to pay attention. As, by the way, would progressives who complain about Democrats not getting stuff done. They got to realize Republicans are playing long game here. I went back deep, deep, deep into the bradblog.com archives late last night to look back years ago when Texas, remember, since 2003, they had their photo ID, they had their ID law, their voter ID law in place. But they needed to make it stricter to keep more people from voting. So going back all the way to 2005, they said, we got to make this stricter. And in 2007, they were finally almost, they were so close at the state legislature to get their strict photo ID restriction in place, the one that would keep students' IDs from being usable, even though they were issued by the state at state schools, that would keep veterans' IDs from being usable for voting. So back in 2007, they were trying and trying to finally get this law passed. That's 7 years ago, by the way, in case you're math challenged. They were trying to get this law passed. And we were writing about it at the time at bradblog.com because it was the end of the session in Texas. And John Gideon, the late John Gideon of VotersUnite.org, who used to write every day at bradblog.com on everything that was going on in elections everywhere in the country. And boy, do I miss him right now. I could use his eyes and ears and fingers right now with everything that's going on this year. But he wrote on, May 21 of 2007. As the Republicans in the state Senate were trying to pass their strict photo ID bill back then, he wrote, "When one goes looking for heroes, they only need to look at Texas State Senator Mario Gallegos. Gallegos had a liver transplant earlier this year," John wrote at the time. "The only way to block the legislation is for all of the Democrats to vote alike, and they will, and to be able to vote for and to be available for a vote in the state Senate. Senator Gallegos had a hospital bed set up in an office less than 100 feet away from his desk on the floor," John Gideon wrote. "The bill has been blocked so far." That was back May 21, 2007. And the Democrats only had enough votes in the state Senate to block it if everyone was there. So the Republicans forced this guy who had had a liver transplant, forced him to set up a hospital bed inside the state house there to block this bill. Days later, May 24, 2007, 3 days later, John Gideon writes at bradblog.com, quote, "The Texas photo ID bill has gone down in flames, and my new hero, State Senator Mario Galagos, has returned to be under his doctor's care." Galagos said, quote, "It's time to go home and do what the doctors tell me. It's something that had to be done. If I hadn't been there, they would have passed it." That's how they stopped the bill in 2007, but it didn't stop the Republicans from trying to get this strict photo ID restriction in place. Didn't stop them, even though there had been no in-person voter fraud that required photo ID. Didn't stop them, because in 2011, they kept trying, year after year. Finally, in 2011, Rick Perry said, this is an emergency. He, under an emergency rule in the Republican legislature, which makes it easier to pass laws, the Texas Republicans were finally able to pass their voter suppression photo ID restriction. They had no evidence that there had been any fraud at the polling place under their old law, the 2003 law, which required, again, already required every voter in Texas to present an ID when voting. They had no evidence. All they wanted to do was restrict the vote. And the federal courts knew this, and the Department of Justice knew this, and that law in 2011 was blocked by the Voting Rights Act. It was blocked again and again and again. And that 2011 vote kept veterans from being able to vote with a veteran's ID. And it was knocked down thanks to the Voting Rights Act. And then last year, 2013, Supreme Court comes along, guts the part, kills the part, takes a knife and stabs it in the heart of the Voting Rights Act, the part that kept Texas from being able to put this law in place, because by Texas's own statistics, it would disproportionately disenfranchise minority voters in the state of Texas. It was therefore unconstitutional in violation of the Voting Rights Act until Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act in 2013. And they immediately said, okay, that same law, it's now back in action. Within hours of the Supreme Court decision, they put it back in action. And it was immediately challenged. And over the next year of discovery and then a full 9-day trial, the U.S. District Court found that that law, quote, creates an unconstitutional burden on the right to vote, has an impermissible discriminatory effect against Hispanics and African Americans, and was imposed with an unconstitutional discriminatory purpose, the judge found. Yes, it was on purpose, she found, which, by the way, is going to lead to trouble for Texas because they may be bailed back into the Voting Rights Act. We'll cover that on another day. The judge also determined that the state requirement that voters produce one of very few specific types of state-issued IDs when voting at the polling place amounted to an unconstitutional poll tax. Since all such IDs now required to vote in the state of Texas require some payment by voters, a poll tax is a violation of the 24th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Back in the 60s, a $1.50 poll tax in Virginia was struck down as a violation of the Constitution. And now you got to pay something like $30 in Texas if you want to get a birth certificate so that you can get your quote-unquote free ID. But the district court struck down that law, found that it was discriminatory, found that it was a violation, found that it was an unconstitutional poll tax under the 24th Amendment. And then along came the appellate court. And just a week or two ago, the appellate court said, yeah, well, you know what? We agree this law could be unconstitutional. We agree that the plaintiffs may, in fact, lose their right to vote. But hey, Supreme Court precedent says we can't change the law at the last second. Even though some 600,000 registered Texas voters don't have the type of ID that is now required to vote under this unconstitutional law, the appellate court said we got to let it go through anyway. It's just too close to an election. We can't change the laws here. even though twice that number, twice 600,000, at least twice that number in Texas of eligible voters do not have the type of ID now required to vote in Texas. Despite the fact that 800,000 eligible voters live more than 150 miles, three-hour round trip from the nearest DMV where you can supposedly get your free ID. Because remember, if you don't have a driver's license, you've got to figure out how to make this three-hour round trip in Texas to get to a DMV somehow to get your free ID, presuming you have the underlying documents, the birth certificate, the passport, the marriage certificate that's needed if you're a woman, all of which cost money, all of which make that law an unconstitutional poll tax. But the Republicans in Texas don't give a damn. The Tea Party Republicans in Texas who pretend to give a damn about the Constitution, they don't give a damn either, even though this clearly violates several provisions of the Constitution. Oh, and by the way, through that entire year-long trial and the nine-day bench trial, Texas, the state of Texas, who already had an ID law in place since 2003 for every voter, the state of Texas was only able to find two cases over the past decade of polling place impersonation that might have been deterred by the new photo ID restriction law. Over 10 years. Oh, that's out of more than 20 million votes cast in the state of Texas. So it's amazing to me that the Supreme Court would then turn around and say, sure, go ahead, use the law anyway. It's fine because it's too close to the election. All those people who can't vote, who have been legal for years, the hell with them. And in fact, that's what we're seeing now. 93-year-old man who's voted all his life in Texas, a veteran, by the way, but he doesn't have a veteran's ID, so he's out. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the notorious RBG, stayed up all night writing her dissent in that Supreme Court case, saying this was absolutely insane and that hundreds of thousands of voters stood to be disenfranchised by this unconstitutional law that everyone admits at this point is unconstitutional. Yes, Texas is appealing it, but that appeal won't happen until later. She stayed up all night. She released her dissent 5 a.m. Saturday morning a week ago, 5 a.m. after staying up all night. She got something that appears to be wrong. I'm running short on time, so I'll send you to bradblog.com or to salon.com, where I wrote about it this week. She actually changed her dissent after it was issued. When we helped to point out that Texas, even though the law says otherwise, Texas seems to now be allowing veterans' IDs after all for voting. So hopefully a few more veterans, if they have that Veterans Affairs card, will be able to vote, even though the law actually disallows it, as far as I can tell. Like I say, I may have more on that in the future. But this is amazing. Supreme Court has allowed massive disenfranchisement to take place in the great state of Texas, even though the law is not needed, even though the law will disenfranchise hundreds of thousands of legal Texas voters, the Republicans in that state don't give a damn, and apparently neither does the Supreme Court.
The right of citizens of the United States to vote in any primary or other election for president or vice president, for electors for president or vice president, or for senator or representative in Congress, shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state by reason of failure to pay any poll tax or other tax.
The eyes of Texas are upon you all the livelong day. The eyes of Texas are upon you. You cannot get away.
Yeah, our eyes are on you, Texas. We're going to take a quick break here, come back with much more, including our musical tribute to touchscreen vote flipping now happening across the country to both Republicans and Democrats alike. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. Stay tuned. yeah. Welcome back. This is your Bradcast. That can only mean one thing. It's either Halloween or voting is underway, and touchscreen votes are flipping everywhere in the country, from Republican to Democratic, from Democratic to Republican. Yes, of course they are. And, you know, they do every year. They do. As a matter of fact, I couldn't decide if I should use that song from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Or a completely different song, since this happens all the time. It happens every goddamn election, frankly. Every 2 years, I'm talking about the same story. Votes are flipping on these touchscreen machines. So I couldn't decide, oh, should I use that from Rocky Horror Picture Show? Or should I use this?
Just a jump to the left.
Yes. Because it is like a time warp. It is amazing. We are seeing over the past week in Cullen County, Texas, Democratic votes are jumping to Republican votes. By the way, that's Cullen County. That's the home of Diebold. Allen, Texas is in Cullen County. And if you want to have a good time, go to bradblog.com. And check out our photographs from my visit some years ago to the Diebold headquarters after hours. That is Allen, Texas. Of course, they still use Diebold touchscreen machines. They still don't work, and they still flip votes from Democratic to Republican. Meantime, in Cook County, Illinois, that's Chicago, Republicans, who didn't used to give a damn about all of this, are all up in arms because on the Sequoia touchscreen machines in Cook County, votes are reportedly flipping from Republican to Democratic. Meantime, down in Maury County, Tennessee, where they use ESNS touchscreens that also don't work, no votes on the Amendment 1, an anti-choice measure in Tennessee, are flipping from no to yes. Now, by the way, back in 2008, the Tennessee legislature voted unanimously to do away with touchscreen machines, to move to paper ballots. And then later that year, the Republicans took over the state house. And they ended up repealing that measure to make sure that paper ballots would not return to Tennessee anytime soon. It's funny because, you know, in Tennessee, where they use these touchscreens all across the state, back in 2008, Tennessee was like the only state to actually have gains for Republicans. Go figure. Anyway, if you ever listen to the Bradcast, if you've ever listened, read bradblog.com, you know I've been talking about this for years and years and years. And while we've stopped it in a bunch of states, there's still a whole bunch of states that still use these same voting systems, including, as I said, Tennessee, Maury County, Tennessee, where those votes are flipping. And now, reportedly today, you can read about this at bradblog.com in Maryland, where they have Diebold touchscreen machines. They have been in place there since 2002. They haven't worked since then, and the Republicans are worked up because all over the state now, votes are flipping from from Republican to Democrats. Gosh, I wish I had told them. Of course I told them. I've been telling them for years. I've been telling them back when Andy Breitbart used to make fun of me for telling them. I was on the Tom Hartman television program earlier this week talking about this bizarre time warp. And once again, the touchscreens flipping all over the country.
Joining us now from Los Angeles for more on this is Brad Friedman, editor and publisher of The Brad Blog, bradblog.com. Brad, welcome back.
Hey, Tom. Good to be back. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. You heard what happened in Maury County, Tennessee. It seems like every election cycle we hear stories like this. A, how common is vote flipping, really? And B, there are all kinds of touch screens in our lives. You go to the bank, you hit a touch screen. Cars, you program your GPS or whatever. We have touch screens all over the place, and for some reason, when you push A comes out. Why is it that on electronic voting machines you push A and B comes out?
Well, there's a number of reasons for that. One, the machines that we use for voting, for touchscreen voting, are absolute crap. I mean, they're made incredibly inexpensively in foreign countries. There's no quality checking on these things. Furthermore,
they're constantly reprogrammed for each and every election. And while our election officials are, for the most part, great, let's say they are not, you know, technology masters. And there's really no testing of them when they define the ballot in each and every election. So it's very common, happens all over the place. A lot of people think we've done away with touchscreen voting, which is 100% unverifiable. They are wrong. We still use it in all kinds of states. That was Tennessee. We use it in Illinois, in Pennsylvania, in Virginia, North and South Carolina, in Georgia, in a whole bunch of the really important races that are on the ballot this year are in places where they use 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting that, yes, tends to flip, as you just saw in Tennessee. And, you know, not to be all Chuck Todd on you and say it affects both sides, but in this matter, it really does affect both sides. We see votes flipping from Republican to Democratic in Cook County, Illinois, over the past week. We see them flipping the other way around in Texas, from Democratic to Republican. So, yeah, this happens all the time. And unlike the voter suppression being put in place by Republicans all around the country, this one really does affect everyone. And ultimately, even when these horrible voting systems work, the problem is supporters of both Republicans and Democrats can have no idea if it actually did work. It's, like I say, 100% faith-based voting still in 2014. It's insane.
And it's faith-based voting where the people running the voting are private corporations, and they refuse to release any of their programming data so that we can see how or why these machines behave this way, because they claim that their profits could be violated. When did we put the profit motive into our vote?
Well, when it came to profitizing our public elections like this, it happened big time after the 2000 election, when we started pretending that it was the voting equipment down in Florida that caused all the problem, passed the Help America Vote Act, put about $4 billion into these systems, which have made things far, far worse, far more difficult to oversee, as you said, because they're private machines. Look, not only the touchscreen machines are the problem, so are the paper ballot optical scan computers, because those are also using secret software made by corporations. And it's impossible to know whether those computers accurately counted the paper ballots unless we bother to actually count the paper ballots by hand, which we don't do. Right. So even in close races, we tend not to do it.
What about other countries, Brad? Yeah. What about the rest of the developed world?
Oh, well, we just, you know, saw a great example of that in Scotland. You know, they had paper ballots hand-marked, yes or no. They checked the box, and they counted it by hand with everyone, the public, all the parties, video cameras rolling, everybody watching as it was done.
Is anybody using these electronic voting machines other than us?
Well, as far as the touchscreens go, when countries like Ireland and Norway have used them, they immediately found they could be hacked, and they immediately got rid of them. In our country, we found they could be hacked over and over and over. We found that they failed in election after election. And so what did we do? We just continued using them, and we are still using them today. That's why it's remarkable to be here with you, Tom, year after year after year, reporting on almost the exact same story each and every election.
We have been having this conversation since 2003.
Yes, we have.
Brad Friedman, thanks for the great work you're doing over at bradblog.com. Thanks for being with us tonight.
It's just a jump to the left. Put your hands on your hips.
No, let's not! Man, can we please stop doing the time warp? Can we please get rid of these goddamn machines once and for all? The answer to that, I'm afraid, is no. Because here's the bad news, as if all of that was the good news. Out here in Los Angeles, enlightened Los Angeles, the largest voting jurisdiction in the nation, guess what?
Los Angeles County is now working to install a new touchscreen system across the largest voting jurisdiction in the nation, out here in Los Angeles. That'll be in place in a year or two. It'll be 100% unverifiable. They'll tell you it's verifiable because it's a computer-printed out ballot. Nope. Not verifiable. We'll talk about that another time. But the Secretary of State race coming up out here in California next Tuesday, the Democrat State Senator Alex Padilla, he's all in favor of the new touchscreen voting system for Los Angeles. The Republican candidate, Pete Peterson, he wants to do away with that paper trail altogether. He just wants touchscreen voting, period. That's what they both want, the Republican and the Democrat out here in California. Looks like I'm going to be doing the time warp for the next few years over and over again. All right, Desi, stand by. If this happens to you, by the way, this year, if your vote flips, try to get it on your capture it on your cell phone. Make sure you tell the polling supervisors and the county headquarters and the Secretary of State that it's happening. Fill out an official form. Refuse to vote on that machine. Tell others that that machine doesn't work. If you can, get the serial number off the machine. It's on the back usually. But report it. Make noise. Raise holy hell. Contact bloggers. Contact the media. Just don't contact me. I know enough about these problems. Ain't nobody listening to me. All right, let's do some green news. Hey, Desi Doyen.
Hey, hey, hey.
Did you enjoy our musical tribute to touchscreen vote flipping?
Yes. Everybody loves the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh, yes, they do.
And you never get a chance to really play it in conjunction with elections.
No, you don't. Somehow you have to make this stuff more fun. And it's also Halloween. So it seems like it all works well together. By the way, before we go to the Green News Report, what folks don't know, if they didn't hear our Green News Reports over the past month, while we've been on Fund Drive here at KPFK, you can get them at iTunes. This is 2014 now on track to be the hottest year on record ever.
Right, for the globe especially, but also for California too, which is, you know, currently in its hottest year on record and its worst drought and all that fun stuff.
Yes, it's in the 80s out there, late October. It's Woo-hoo! Amazing out here in Los Angeles, but yes, across the globe. Okay, finally, this year, global warming, climate change, may actually have an effect in this year's elections.
Yeah, it turns out, surprisingly, climate change, the environment, and energy are a thing.
They're a thing.
For the first time.
Back in 2008, 2012, presidential elections never came up, was never raised at the debates.
Right.
What the candidates felt about climate change. This year, it's coming up. We've been covering it the past several weeks. It's been coming up in all of these debates, in all of these Senate races.
And not even just the Senate races, in down-ticket races. You know, in fact, even George P. Bush, grandson of George H.W. Bush, nephew of George W. Bush, George P. Bush, son of Jeb Bush, is running for Texas Land Commissioner. And that is not a major race that gets national attention. He was even asked about climate change.
Is he a denier?
He is one of those who likes to dodge the question and say, I'm not a scientist. I just know the scientists are wrong.
None of them are scientists, so they don't know whether it's happening or not. But it turns out they're all doctors because they know exactly what to do about Ebola. So they know they're not scientists. They're just physicians, apparently. Boy, it sure is convenient. All right. Well, the climate change on the ballot is the subject of this week's Green News Report.
Climate change and election 2014.
Mitch McConnell is fighting back, fighting hard, opposing regulations on coal.
The high stakes on energy.
Let's shut down the federal EPA.
The environment.
The Republicans are having to try to greenwash themselves in purple states.
And global warming.
If the radicals take control of the United States Senate, there will be no movement on climate change.
Climate change on the ballot. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Not only is the ice not melting, more polar bears are alive and happy today than we've had in 100 years. Life is good. Miss Kelly, I got to tell you, life is good.
Yes, on Fox News, life is good. This is your Green News Report.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
Okay, Desi Doyen, aside from the disasters on Fox News, whether it's Ebola, terrorism, or anything else, when it comes to global warming, everything is great, nothing to worry about, and that very question is going to be on the ballot across the country next week, sort of.
Yeah, it's mostly the implications of global warming on energy and water and the environment and policies. The 2014 midterm elections are on Tuesday, November 4th. They are the first elections in U.S. history in which the media is covering global warming as a defining issue with major implications going forward into 2016 and beyond. Polls show the majority of Americans want government action on global warming, but Republicans are still holding on to denial. In the Colorado governor's race, for example, the Republican candidate, Bob Beaupre, outright denies climate change, in contrast with Colorado's current governor, Democrat John Hickenlooper.
Mr. Beaupre, do you believe humans are contributing significantly to climate change?
No.
Mr. Hickenlooper?
Significantly? Yes.
Well, that's clear enough. A clear contrast.
Denial of global warming, denying the scientific data, has huge implications for policies in Colorado on water supplies, fossil fuel regulations, disaster readiness, the food supply. In Colorado alone, the state's booming oil and gas industry is already colliding with residents over control of fracking and the state's water supplies. Other Republican candidates have tried to dodge the question on climate change, like Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, locked in a close race with Democrat Allison Lundergan Grimes in Kentucky.
Senator, that's a yes or no question. Do you believe in global warming?
It is not a yes or no question. I'm not a scientist.
While McConnell's Democratic opponent, Grimes, accepts the science of climate change, both of them are beholden to Kentucky's powerful coal industry. On November 4th, control of the U.S. Senate is at stake. Republicans need a gain of only 6 seats to get control and put Mitch McConnell in charge as Senate Majority Leader. McConnell has promised to defund the Environmental Protection Agency and federal climate science research and block President Obama's new historic emission standards for power plants and cars. Republican control of the Senate would also put climate change denier James Inhofe of Oklahoma in charge of the Senate Environment Committee.
Wait a minute. This guy?
The notion that man-made gases cause global warming is probably the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people.
The guy who said climate change is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on America is going to be in charge of the U.S. Senate Environment Committee.
Oh, and it gets better. Denier Ted Cruz of Texas would be in charge of the Senate Science Subcommittee.
Of course he would.
Long-term control of the U.S. Senate will also impact whether the U.S. ratifies the upcoming United Nations International Climate Treaty, now under negotiations. Now, top environmental organizations are fighting in the election ad wars in key races, like the League of Conservation Voters, which aired this ad against Michigan Republican Senate candidate Terry Lynn Land.
We see it every day in Michigan. Climate change having real effects. So why is Terry Lynn Land still ignoring the science? She's got her reasons. Over 6 million of them. From the Koch brothers front groups backing her campaign. So polluters can keep dumping carbon pollution into our air with no limits.
And of course, that's the reason that all of these Republicans are pretending they don't believe in climate change, is because they are getting millions and millions of dollars from the fossil fuel industry to pretend that that's the case.
The record $85 million that environmental groups plan to spend is no match for the $300 million spent by the billionaire Koch brothers and their shadowy front groups alone.
There's a hell of a lot at stake on the ballot next week. Don't know if the American voters know that, but I can tell you the fossil fuel industry sure as hell does. And that's why they're spending everything they need to buy this election for themselves. For much more on all of these stories and the high stakes in next week's election, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can and should find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. For BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Who's gonna take on the big machine?
Yes, it does. And it starts next Tuesday at the polling place. I was just talking to someone in the control room who didn't know the election was next Tuesday.
You know, it's interesting. If millennials voted, they would find out that they have a lot more power than the over 65 group that votes quite a lot. And they could actually change things, really, really, really make huge change. Also, if you want more information in California on the Proposition 1, the huge water bond issue, it's sort of a preview of what could come for the rest of the country when it comes to water infrastructure. Look at Pacific Institute at pacinst.org. They have a good analysis of
it. It's a huge water bill in the middle of the largest drought on record out here in California. Jerry Brown is in favor of Props 1 and 2. Are you, Desi Doyen?
You know, when I look at it, this is not going to matter. It's not going to affect the drought that we're in right now, but it will probably be a good site towards helping us a down payment on droughts in the future. It's a scary situation we're facing.
All right. That's coming up Tuesday, and a lot is coming up on Tuesday all across the country, and we will be back next week, Wednesday, I guess, after the day after the election. And anybody who thinks we're going to know by then if this thing is over and if the Republicans have taken over the Congress or not, I don't think that's going to happen. This election, I am predicting here today, is going to be going on for quite a while. It may go on through December, maybe even January, depending on how the runoffs go in Louisiana and Georgia. The election doesn't end just because the polls have closed. You got to keep fighting. All right, we'll be back, same Brad time, same Brad channel next week. My thanks to Desi Doyen, our producer, to Oscar Araujo, our associate producer, and to our board op G. Until we see you next week, you can find me on the Twitters at the Brad Blog and at bradblog.com. Good night, America.